All right, glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. It's 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. Got a lot of stuff that we are going to do a deep dive on as it relates to the New York area and the city of New York, where it's kind of ground zero here. And a lot of information I'm going to pass on to you, including now 75,795 cases. We have the most horrific, insane madness in terms of there are people that no matter what is going on, they will turn this into an opportunity to bludgeon Donald Trump, who frankly is moving heaven and earth for 50 states. And it really, really ticks me off. Let me start with facts without fear, because there is anecdotal evidence on a lot of different issues. Dr. Oz will check in with us on the medical side of things today. We're now seeing movement in the country geographically that is somewhat concerning. Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Detroit, Chicago, worried about those areas. But right now, for the moment, it's all things New York. I mean, I grew up in New York, lived 5 years in Rhode Island, 5 years in California, 2 years in Alabama, 4 years in Georgia. Then I came back to New York. All these years, so I drove into the city last night so I could be, you know, this ship is amazing. This Navy hospital ship, the Comfort, is so amazing. And the people on it are even more amazing. 12 operating rooms. This thing is incredible. And I've never got into the city that fast. You get to the city and there's like nobody walking the streets. It's almost like, Linda, tell me if I'm wrong here, like Contagion, the movie. Remember with Dustin Hoffman and Rene Russo? It's scary. It's eerie. It's chilling. It's a tough time. And I've been warning people, the next few weeks are going to be rough. You got to buckle up here. We have anecdotal information, evidence on the medical side, the treatment side. That's where hydroxychloroquine comes in, and along with Azithromax. And some are saying you got to add zinc to it, too. They might be having better results there. Awaiting more anecdotal evidence. Dr. Oz has all the latest numbers on that. I know everybody's been focused on the issue of ventilators. We now know that Ford and GM are going to be banging these out. We expect thousands by the middle of this month and 50,000 ventilators in 100 days. I'm hoping we don't need them, because when you get to the point you need that, you're in trouble. I'm hoping that, and I'm going to get into this in some detail, that hydroxychloroquine and Azithromax, all the anecdotal information we're bringing to you, I hope we can get more availability of it, because Novartis, one of the pharmaceutical companies in Israel, and Bayer and others are now mass producing it, and I have not seen anything that scares me at all. Everything I read gives me a lot of hope. I'm not a doctor. Dr. Oz will weigh in on that part of this. We know, well, this was anecdotal, but somewhat interesting. New York Times reporting yesterday the number of new corona cases have started to level off in Washington State, where the nation's first corona hotspot erupted. That was in late January. So, in other words, I keep saying if the pattern holds, in other words, China, in other words, South Korea, you know, we're beginning to see a decline seemingly in Italy. Now San Francisco, New York probably has not hit its apex yet. But the pattern, if it holds, it hits a height, it gets apocalyptic and it gets scary, then levels off, and then a dramatic usual decline. Again, if patterns hold. This is not my area of expertise, but I have read more than I've ever thought I'd read in my life about this. The infectious disease doctor, Steve Perotti, at one of the medical centers, medical group Permanente in Northern California, said that Kaiser Permanente is now seeing a leveling off of COVID-19 cases in our hospitals across Northern California, 4.5 million members. Kaiser is also seeing calls related to colds, cough drop by more than half since social distancing took effect. That's a key indicator that precedes hospitalization. I've not seen Gavin Newsom be like Andrew Cuomo. I really haven't seen it so far. Now, I'm not paying as close attention, but we believe he said very strongly that the stay-at-home order has helped advance our efforts, reducing the stress on the system, and we believe would have already materialized in more acute ways had we not advanced those protocols. And I think hence that is anecdotally what the president was doing this weekend by extending out the 15 days till April the 30th. They are having big problems in Italy as it relates, believe it or not, fears of looting as the corona lockdown is stressing the economy there and the prime minister fighting to hold the entire society together. They were, I mean, you add this to a nationalized healthcare system and single payer system, and it's an unmitigated disaster. For those of you displaced, there was in terms of working, and you want to work. I mean, some people can't stand being home, and I don't blame you. Walmart is now hiring about 5,000 new workers a day. And they said they will easily surpass their previous plan to hire a total of 150,000 new employees. Same with Amazon. So that was in Business Insider. Again, people looking for, you know, work, looking for jobs. You want to keep things going till the assistance comes, maybe 3 weeks from now. The U.S. Naval Hospital is now docked. As of yesterday in New York City, the Javits Center, built by the Army Corps of Engineers, that is open. And we know that it's an incredible support system on that ship. 12 operating rooms, 20 surgical recovery rooms, 80 intensive care beds, 900 additional beds. And these people are just incredible. But they are taking on non-coronavirus patients. There's a big screening even to get into the area. I was so far away from the ship, actually, but I got to see it. It's like two city blocks long. It's incredible. But they take your temperature. You just don't get anywhere near that ship unless you've been checked medically. And that happened to me as I was going in last night. We have other temporary hospitals now being built. Nassau County, Suffolk County, Westchester County. And the president approving even more sites nationwide as the Army Corps of Engineers is now prepping over 100 sites nationwide. They're also looking out and looking for hot spots around the country. Okay, after New York hits the top and starts declining, how do we take all of that equipment and all of those medical personnel and all those beds and everything else and move it to geographic area B, C, or D if that happens? Again, we all hope not. A lot of props to all our partners that have stepped up in the corporate community. They're doing pretty much everything. California-based Virgin Orbit is now starting to mass-produce ventilators. You got Hanes and Jockey and Procter & Gamble. But why are they hitting Mike Lindell of MyPillow.com? He's changed his whole manufacturing center away from his business to build masks. Oh, because he said, I believe in God, and thank God Donald Trump's in charge for this. Oh, okay. Let's just beat the crap out of him for that. Meanwhile, okay, how much money is he likely losing and investing in helping his fellow man? We also have Abbott Labs. This is really, really important. But on the other side, it's a little scary, too. And that is they have successfully created a test for corona, COVID-19, that will get results in around 5 minutes, and every state will receive a lot of those testing machines, and they can perform up to 50,000 tests per day, which they're ready to put into effect in fairly short order. Now, the anti-lupus or the lupus medication treatment and anti-malarial drug hydroxychloroquine, that has now been authorized for emergency use nationwide after the promising results. Again, we'll share more with Dr. Oz later. The giant Novartis, again, donating 130 million doses of the drug. Teva is the company in Israel. It's escaped my attention. They donated 6 million doses already, another 4 million doses on the way. Bayer, similarly, are putting together as much as they can produce, as quickly as they can produce it. I'm just preparing you all, though, if the patterns hold, this is now where it gets rough. This is probably the moment where it matters the most. Everything that we were able to get in place, as imperfect as it will probably be, is nothing perfect, is the time that was bought because of the travel ban and the quarantine. It's incalculable. It would have been harder It would have been faster. It would have been more deadly. The numbers would be exponentially higher. And when I get to the political side of things, which I will later, not one Democrat says anything except the worst things they can say about Donald Trump. And it's really infuriating in New York when I give you the full story about Governor Cuomo. It really ticks me off. Now, Chris Cuomo apparently contracted the virus. I've known Chris a long time. He actually, before he was at CNN, worked at Fox News. I have a great relationship with him. It's not personal, but his brother, you know, with the photo ops at the hospital center, at the Jacob Javits Center, and then, you know, his photo op at this Navy ship yesterday, and then he's lecturing everybody on what they need to do. And when you look at the real facts, it is mind-numbing how ill-prepared New York as a state and New York as a city post 9/11, zero preparedness that I see. And now that we're getting more information, it's even worse than I thought. And then, so you get all these hospitals built before you're really taking on the heavy load of patients that are coming here. It's an international state and city, New York City. You have the highest concentration of people in the smallest geographical area. And then you have, yeah, it's the number one terror target in all of the United States. And I mean, they had like zero preparation and numerous opportunities to prepare. And I'm reading everybody in New York. They watch Andrew Cuomo, you know, go out there and he's saying a lot of, he's pretty much echoing what the national responses and what how people should conduct themselves, et cetera. And then he usually, you know, the cheap shot here, the cheap shot there. And I'm like, I can't take it. It's really infuriating. China's coronavirus count apparently excluded infected people with no symptoms. They apparently are going to start reporting the number of asymptomatic carriers. Too late in the game, if you want my opinion. You got all sorts of crazy stuff happening. The D.C. mayor threatening jail time if you leave your home during coronavirus. Houston mayor is pleading with crooks and criminals to chill until the coronavirus pandemic is over. Then go back to being a criminal? The politics of this is unbelievable. Right as we roll along, facts without fear. I know this gets scary for everybody. Everybody gets that part. I just urge everybody to have a little perspective. And I'm not minimizing it. I am just, there has to be some perspective in terms of to help, as you watch the numbers grow, people contracting the virus, et cetera, the vast overwhelming majority will not have significant serious health issues. I know we don't talk about it every year, but we lose tens of thousands of Americans every year with the flu. I know the last pandemic, we had no idea how that would evolve or develop, didn't develop into this, but 60.8 million Americans contracted H1N1. Hundreds of thousands went to the hospital needing assistance to live. You know, in the first year, we lost, 13,000, I think in the end, 17,000 Americans worldwide, over 500,000. Now, does that mean we don't fight like hell to preserve every life? No. I think as a conservative, it defines who we are to fight for every single American. I've been saying this from the beginning. I want a cure for cancer. I want a cure for heart disease. I want a cure for mental illness. I want a cure for everything. And one of the great areas we can put our hope in, well, faith in God, you can put your hope there. You can put your, because I believe in God, you can put your faith, hope in that God puts talents in every person. Education from the Latin means to bring forth from within. And those talented medical researchers and scientists and doctors and nurses and EMTs and the people on the front lines of everything, they are there. And look at how we were able to break down the sequence of corona in a record 6 weeks. So now we're in phase one trial of a vaccine. How is it that we're now able to use a drug that's 45 years old that's showing tremendous potential anecdotally on big numbers are getting bigger now every day. I have more faith in hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin than I ever had. And this is my own. I'm not the doctor. I am just reading. I'm telling you what I hear. I'll let Dr. Oz give you his advice. Or convalescent plasma, taking the antibodies from somebody that recovered and infusing it into a sick person. All right, more coming up. All right, 25 now until the top of the hour. 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. Dr. Fauci said, and I'm not sure if this is, I'm looking at different numbers maybe than he is, but he says he is seeing quotes of early signs of hope for New York in terms of a reported decline in the rate of growth in new infections. You've got to pay close attention to the math on that, but you're starting to see the daily increases are not in that steep incline. They're starting to possibly flatten out. And then he pointed out once you start to level off, then you're going to have less people who are going to be going into intensive care. And then later on, because it always lags, you're going to see a decrease in deaths. We'll see. I'll ask Dr. Oz about that later on. I want to get into one very specific issue, though, as it relates to our reliance on pharmaceuticals and medical equipment from China. Now, I think the person that has warned us the most about China is Donald J. Trump and unfair trade practices, et cetera. But what we're now seeing are some shortages. And I know that there are many ventilators, for example, that are on back order from China. Now, we're making our own GM Ford, as I've been telling you, stepping up. But an estimated 80% of active pharmaceutical ingredients used in the U.S. market comes from foreign sources. And the FDA recalled inspectors from China due to the outbreak. And that means delays in manufacturing. And then that raises the question, why are we so reliant on China for you know, basic, fundamental, must-have, can't-be-dependent-on-others, you know, medicines? Now, that's not going to be the case with hydroxychloroquine, as Novartis is prepared to give us 130 million doses. Our friends in Israel, Teva, have handed over, what, it's going to be 10 million by the time it's all said and done for free. Bayer, same thing. Manny Sethi is the orthopedic trauma surgeon in Nashville, founder of Healthy Tennessee, Republican U.S. Senate candidate. I want to get into specifically this issue of a possible disruption of the pharmaceutical supplies. This is something you're really good at. First, tell us what's going on. I do hear that Tennessee is becoming a little bit more of a hot spot, like Georgia and Florida and maybe Detroit and Chicago, but what's going on there? But more importantly, what about our reliance on pharmaceutical chains coming from a place like China?
Well, Sean, hey, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for what you've done for this country and for the conservative movement. I am a trauma surgeon here in Nashville. And yes, you know, we're seeing rises in cases. We got about 2,500 in Tennessee. 13 people have passed away. So we are seeing sort of that exponential rise. And But I believe with the Lord's help, we're going to get through this together, and I know we will make it through. But you are exactly right. Listen, the bottom line is this, is that this is a matter of national security. You know, vital drugs and supplies, they got to be made in America. We just cannot allow the Chinese to have a chokehold over our pharmaceutical drugs or any of our supply chains. I mean, 90% of our drugs, you know, our surgical gowns, our masks. I mean, these things are being made in China, and that's why we're seeing what we're seeing right now. And if we learn anything from what we're seeing, it's that we got to bring all of this back stateside. You know, years ago, Newt Gingrich, he tried to suggest this, that we need to give some of these companies tax advantages, tax breaks to get them to come back to America. But that's what we have to do, and we have to do it now.
What percentage of our pharmaceuticals come from China alone, if 80% we rely on foreign countries for it?
I'd say, so there are about 20 drugs, Sean, that cannot be made here, that the vital components of them, like, for example, Tylenol, are made in China. And so this is a real problem, you know? And here's what I think. I think America needs to hear a version of kind of what I tell my trauma patients the morning after surgery. And that's, you know, when we look back on this moment, it could be a moment when we stood up, we fought forward, and we found our purpose. This is America, and when it comes to medicine, we can do this. America has the knowledge and the resources to win this fight. But as to how we got here, we know the answer. And, you know, China did this to us. and we can never allow this to happen again. And what that means is we need an industrial revolution in America, but this time it's got to be around healthcare. We got to make the ventilators. We got to make the gowns. We got to make
the
masks.
I'm going to get into that in a second, especially in New York. You know, China actually sold Spain $467 million in supplies, and according to a FoxNews.com report, many of them were substandard. That's pretty obnoxious. I mean, wow.
You're exactly right. You know, and that's what's happening around the world right now. It happened in England. They opened a box, and about 70% of these masks are not working. And just think about it. You're a doctor, you're a nurse, you're a healthcare provider, you're wearing these N95 masks, and they don't even work. And that's why if I'm your next U.S. senator here in Tennessee, that's what we're talking about. And I'd love for you to check us out. Go to drmannyforsenate.com.
All right, Dr. Manny, thank you. And keep up the good work, and our thoughts and prayers still with the people. They all those people lost their lives from those tornadoes. Unbelievable. Sad. I love what Mitch McConnell said. You know, all of this criticism, you know, fiddling as people died. What was Nancy Pelosi fiddling with when Donald Trump was putting in place the travel ban and the quarantines? Yeah, they were fiddling with impeachment while the president prevented a much bigger pandemic in this country, exponentially bigger, incalculably bigger. So good for him for finally speaking out. I saw this in Politico today. Most Democratic strategists believe that Trump's reelection prospects will be diminished by the pandemic with its rising death toll and ruinous effect on the economy. You mean because we're spending money on the National Endowment for the Arts and Humanities and the Kennedy Center because the Democrats held the money hostage for hospitals and for workers in America and small business and big business? Oh, okay. We're going to politicize it to that extent. You got an Iowa Democratic National Committee member, Scott Brennan, quoted in this piece, former state party chair. If the economy pops back, it's hard to know what people are going to think. If life were fair, he said, Trump would already be paying a price for his chaotic handling. You know, this infuriates me. It just does, because what do you want at this point while all of this entire Democratic Party have done nothing for 3 years plus except Russia, Russia, Ukraine, Ukraine, impeach, impeach? He was putting in place a travel ban. They were going forward with their witch hunt impeachment on Ukraine. And they were saying and doing nothing about this. If you cannot say as a Democrat or a member of the mob and the media that one single decision likely saved incalculable numbers of Americans from contracting the disease, there's not an intellectually honest bone in your body. You're gone. That's derangement. And most of the Democrats I know would have opposed it anyway. Xenophobic, hysteria, fear-mongering. I mean, it just is, it's sad. It's like a vested interest. Well, this is going to help our re-election campaign. I just sit there and I'm like, wow. Okay, that's where your head's at. We have a hospital executive in Buffalo Hospital fired apparently for suggesting, you know, what have I been saying? Bring out the best and worst in people. Anyway, Facebook comments suggesting supporters of President Trump should infect each other with coronavirus. Like, man, it's cold. Congresswoman announces she has corona after meeting with Nancy Pelosi. I guess she might have to self-quarantine. New York Congresswoman Velasquez, we wish her the best. Who wants anybody to be sick? If you want somebody to be sick, you're sick. You know, whether you agree or disagree. And that's what I said about Chris Cuomo. Chris, I used to work with him at Fox. He worked at Fox News first. Which does bring the issue of, you know, what's going on here in New York. Now, I hope that Dr. Fauci is right. But I am getting a little ticked off at a lot of different issues here. I know what Fauci's saying. If you go from, for example, the 29th of March, total hospitalized 9,517, little over 1,200 more the next day. It was going up at a faster rate. So that's something to keep an eye on for sure, hoping that we hit the plateau or the apex earlier. 75,795 cases in New York. New York City, 43,139. About 1,600 deaths now in the state of New York. A lot of people hospitalized. Now, this gets me to this question that we just have to examine here. And that is, what is the role of governors? What is the role of mayors? What is the role of the federal government here? Because Donald Trump has 50 states he's got to worry about, not just one. And when I look at the insanity that is New York, I hear all the speculations. Is Andrew Cuomo positioning to take over for quid pro quo Joe, the ever confused one? Well, you know that New York is a sanctuary state. Cuomo signed that. You know that New York, their bail reform law, no cash payments required for most defendants. Okay, another dumb idea. Now you have the issue of ventilators in New York. Well, there was an opportunity. Betsy McCoy had written extensively about this. And the New York Times even wrote about this in, when was that? In March of this, March 17th of this month, last month. What is today? Today is the 31st. All right, this month. And they wrote about 18,000 ventilators very soon, far short of that. But anyway, so in 2015, there was an opportunity for Cuomo. He's now, this is his third term as governor of New York. New York is the number one terrorist target for the whole United States. That's a fact. Probably D.C. a close second. And other big cities right behind. But number one, we had the First Trade Center bombing. We all know what happened on 9/11/2001. Now, if you have a pandemic, the highest concentration of people in the smallest geographical area, we're talking about, you know, 10 million people, depending on what workday it might be, and a very small geographical area. Well, if there is a pandemic and we have pandemics, H1N1 or N1H1, as Joe Biden calls it, you're ground zero. Now, you would think that New York and New York City is prepared for these things. No, they were not. And this is what is infuriating to me. I wouldn't care if Cuomo, I mean, every day it's like a photo op in front of, oh, the Navy hospital ship, the Comfort. And the day before, it's at the Javits Center, 3,000 hospital beds built by the Army Corps of Engineers. All of that is Donald Trump. Donald Trump sends up 4,000 ventilators. They put him in a warehouse, and he's literally, I need 30, 40,000 now. Well, we don't know if you're going to need them, but obviously with Ford and GM and all these other companies, you know, heaven and earth is being moved to make sure every state has the ventilators. And it is beyond frustrating because they actually set up a task force because there was a panel that was convened in 2015 that New York would be short by as many as 15,783 ventilators. They could have bought them then. Instead, they decided to, you know, for hospitals, they came up with guidance as to who to ventilate and who to effectively not ventilate during an emergency. Now, if you're the number one target for terror and you're the number one risk for a pandemic, he's lecturing Donald Trump, who is building him now five hospitals in record time with all the medicines that they need. And that brings me to another issue. And that is why the only way you can get hydroxychloroquine in New York is if you're in a hospital. There's an executive order by Cuomo. You can't get it from a pharmacy. Why not? We have 130 million doses on the way. 6 million arrived from Israel. 4 million more are coming. It is beyond frustrating to me to watch all of this happen. And I'm watching this and everyone's saying, oh, Cuomo's going to run. All right, go ahead and run. But, you know, if you're going to stay there, if you're going to be in front of a hospital that basically the Trump administration built for you, if you're going to warehouse 4,000 ventilators he sent up to you instead of putting them in place or perhaps even temporarily giving them to places that might need them more and then getting them back as the need develops, as obviously the country is saying all this, hospitals, I see zero preparedness by the state of New York and by the city of New York. Zero. It is incomprehensible to me. And then the photo ops, that the things that Donald Trump has done for them, and then all they do is criticize Donald Trump. I'm like, man, that takes a lot. You know, Betsy McCoy, we'll put it up on Hannity.com. They had the opportunity. They were told that they were short nearly 16,000 ventilators. And what was the result? Instead of buying them, now I've gone over all of the waste and the fraud and the abuse, and it's significant in terms of New York. It's very significant because in New York, for example, the 2015 task force determined the state would need thousands of additional ventilators to handle any pandemic or any real emergency. He didn't purchase one. And then you look, well, where did Cuomo spend the money? Well, we've gone over that in a lot of detail, too. I mean, the fact that they spend $750 million on a failed solar panel factory and $90 million on an empty light bulb factory and another, what, $600 million on something else. They could have been buying masks and ventilators and gowns and gloves and everything that they might need, knowing they are ground zero or the most at risk for any of these things. It's them politicizing. New York needs it. America's going to give it to them. I mean, but what point are you going to continue to just hammer away when you failed at your preparedness? Glad you are with us. Write down our toll-free number. It's 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. Couple of news items, facts without fear, land of the free, home of the brave. Moments like this, it means something, right? Anyway, according to the Lancet Infectious Disease, which is a new research published in a medical journal, they're now estimating about 0.66% of those infected with the virus will die. The coronavirus death rate, which is much lower than earlier rates. Remember, we were hearing numbers as high as 3.4% and 2%. And Dr. Fauci had said at the time in one of my interviews with him that it was 2%, but it was really going to be lower than 1%. So he called that right. Dr. Fauci, and I don't want to give false hope here because it's still in New York, you know, somewhat acute situation that's happening. But he said that there are early signs of hope amid the coronavirus. You're starting to see, I'm quoting him, the daily increases are not in that steep decline. They're starting to possibly flatten out, he said, which is what we kind of are hoping for. It gets apocalyptic. It's horrible, horrible, horrible. Then a leveling off and then hopefully the precipitous drop. Again, you look at China, South Korea, other areas. Once you start to level off, you're going to have less people who are going to be in intensive care. And then later on, because it always lags, you'll see a decrease in deaths sooner rather than later. Anyway, our medical aid team, the man, Dr. Oz himself, is back with us. How are you, sir?
Always doing well.
Well, I want to just say on a personal note. So yeah. I have a friend. He was in the hospital. He had pneumonia. I freaked out about a week ago. Went nuts. I called Dr. Oz. Within 3 minutes, he was on the phone with my friend and immediately thereafter on the phone with his doctor. Then, because I've been following all this research on hydroxychloroquine along with azithromycin, they were not using that treatment at this hospital. And Dr. Oz convinced this hospital to do it. My friend is now out of the hospital. And I tell me if I'm wrong. I think he was about 24 hours away from intubation. Am I right about that?
Well, his physician, who very capable person, was very concerned that he'd be intubated. And of course, once that happens, you can't clean your own secretions because you can't cough up like you're supposed to. The body can't do that. So it complicates the recovery quite a bit.
And Dr. Oz, I'm on the phone with him every night. I think I kept you up till like 1:30 in the morning last night asking you stupid questions. But thank you for doing that. And I just want people to know the goodness in you and the love and concern you have and how this is your calling in life. And I've learned a lot from you in the last couple of weeks. Thank you for all of that. Let's talk. Where do you think we are now?
So the rapid increase in admissions to the hospital has slowed in New York, which is great news. It means that a tactic that I know a lot of people have suffered through, not just in New York, but also around the country, of staying at home, is paying off. And I'm optimistic. We're going to find out. You know, you can never predict the future, but I'm optimistic that our experience will mimic that of China, and that in less than 2 weeks we'll hit our peak. That means we got to supply everything we need for 2 weeks. But you know, I'm just talking to people on the front line taping today's show, and you know, folks are desperate in that they're not sure that they have what they need if the numbers keep getting worse and worse and worse. But if they begin to tape this, they're stabilized. Then, you know, most of them seem confident that they can manage. So that is the hope. And you don't want to do this any later than New York started. But I'm hopeful that in 2 weeks when that happens, you get a pretty abrupt decrease after that of cases because people have been quarantining themselves. So if you're already sick, you're in the system. If you're not sick, you won't get sick. And it starts to push in the right direction. The data you just revealed about mortality rates is also encouraging because each of those tenths of a percent of mortality translates to a lot of lives. And, you know, the range is quite large now. We could lose 50,000 people. We could lose 200,000 people. But we actually control our destiny to a large extent. We can't control what we already did, and those patients are already in the hospital, but we can alter the chance of people a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks should not get ill.
One of the things I've highlighted as we've watched this all unfold, I think the books are being rewritten on pandemics. Travel bans, I think, will be less controversial in the future, for example. Public-private partnerships, drive-up testing now evolved into, I mean, Abbott's discovery this week that was announced on Sunday is amazing because now you're going to have a five-minute test and it's going to be 50,000 a week, which is amazing too. Off-label use, getting rid of draconian regulations.
It's 50,000 a day.
You're right. 50,000 a day. You are correct. I meant to say that.
It's a lot.
I didn't know that.
The president said that we'd have those out, he was hoping, within a week. And, you know, that's remarkable. And if I can just give everyone 2 seconds of backdrop on this, the reason that's important is because the inefficiency that it creates in the healthcare system when we don't know your diagnosis is massive. So if you're in a hospital and I don't know if you're COVID-19 or not, I've got to use protective gear. I've got to use an isolation room. I take up all kinds of space and resources for someone who doesn't need it because a lot of times most of the time tests are negative.
I look at what happened in New York. I saw that ship come in. I was broadcasting from there last night. You were on the show with us last night. You're going to be on again tonight. Thank you. And I see the Javits Center with 3,000 beds, and I see hospitals triage built in days in Nassau County, Suffolk County, Westchester County, a full-on, hands-on approach. And simultaneously, you have been so dedicated to getting to the bottom of what treatment we might have to save lives now, because even though we broke down the sequence of this virus in record time and we're, you know, stage one trials of a vaccine, that's a long way off. You want to keep people alive now. And hydroxychloroquine with Zithromax is one, and you're looking into many others.
We've got a whole bunch of options. And just to divide it up for the listener real quickly, think about this. If you're going to beat a virus, you either enhance the native defense of the body so the virus never gets into you, or you stop the virus from getting into the cells, or you don't let the cells replicate the virus because the virus is powerless without the cells replicating it, or you have a tactic to prevent the over-exaggerated response to the body once the virus is there. So there are four things that could work, and there are dozens of really smart ideas from brilliant researchers, many of them Americans, but folks collaborating around the world. I mean, every day there's a couple extra coming out, and some of these are going to hit, and they're going to hit big. And so I'm pretty confident we're going to have a way of ameliorating, reducing the mortality rates you were quoting even further. And so this virus gets reduced to something that's more manageable. All we got to do is give medicine time. Literally, the role of the person listening to who can hear my voice right now is just hang on dearly and don't make any big mistakes like violating some of the offerings that the White House task force has put out there, and then medicine is going to catch up.
I think you already are, because look, I've asked you this every day, and I'm going to ask you again because there are always new people listening. Hydroxychloroquine with the Zithromax and maybe zinc. I see studies that combine zinc with it. I have not seen anything at all negative on it, and the anecdotal data, research, evidence, as you keep updating us every day, shows more promise by the hour to me.
Well, the real key question, and you've asked me, and I'll just volunteer it, is would I take it myself? Absolutely. Would I give it to friends of mine? I already have. and pay.
You have to be careful. Why in New York did they put an executive order in place? Pharmacies can't dispense it, Dr. Oz. Why not?
Because
Novartis said they're going to make 130 million doses.
God bless them. And they're Novartis again. Another. I have to say this because pharma gets beaten up all the time. These guys are donating 130 million, as you said. That's a shocking amount,
yeah.
And it's kind. Yeah. And so the total amount of will get donated into our conference is well over 150 million pills when they're done with it. But the key is you have to have the pills in the pharmacy to dispense them. And in New York State, if you have rheumatoid arthritis or lupus, autoimmune ailment, this is a very commonly used drug. So I suspect, I don't know because I haven't talked to him about it, but I suspect the governor said, wait a minute, I don't want to have people who have a known solution to their problem penalized by not being able to get pills so people can go out and hoard the pills. So the state has pills now, set from the federal government. They're using them in many hospitals, I believe. But they're supposed to be part of a larger clinical trial that I have to admit I don't know the details on exactly how far along they are because it's not been very transparent. But my hope is the pills are being used appropriately for the sickest people. And eventually when we have enough pills, the governor will lift the ban. It's a little weird to have a governor block the FDA, who, as you know, day before yesterday, Sunday night, working on weekends, said, we're good with this. We're going to let doctors prescribe this. It's already FDA. It's already approved for malaria and these other ailments. You know, doctors can use it off-label until we've got a better solution.
Now, I don't want to drag you into my political world, and I'm very serious when I ask this question. I watched you this morning on Fox and Friends, and you said this is a cautionary tale. We did our best. We were too late. Now, and something you said to me last night is sparking this question in a private conversation we had. Now, in 2015, I look at New York, for example, the number one terror target in the whole United States. You have, if there's a pandemic, the number one threat because you have the high concentration of people in the smallest geographical area. You know, 10 million people is a lot of people in a small island. And so in 2015, the state of New York had an option. They recommended that they get an additional 16,000 ventilators. They didn't do it. And what infuriates me on the political side, and by the way, I'm praying for my friend Chris Cuomo. I've known him for a long time. He used to be at Fox. And he's going to be fine. He's in great shape. But what bothers me is there was zero preparation, Dr. Oz. And you said we did our best. We were too late. I look at the president. He got the crap beat out of him for his travel ban and his quarantine 10 days after the first known case in the U.S., It seems like with the triage centers and the hospitals being built and the ventilators and everything, I mean, all hands on deck. And then I watch these people politicize it. And then I look at state government, local government, the mayor, and I'm furious because all they do is point fingers at Donald Trump and say, you need to provide 30,000 more ventilators. And that makes me mad.
I got to say, the one word that comes to mind is I think about not just our political leaders, but me and a lot of us in the medical field who think we know better is humbleness. I don't think many Americans in leadership position would have believed we'd be here even a month ago. And you're right. Folks, when they heard about the travel ban, said, what are you talking about? But likewise, when they're talking about closing the schools, they said, what are you talking about? Closing down business. Are you kidding? I mean, none of these were feasible. And it shows you a little bit about human nature. It's super easy to point out the flaws of people who had to make the big decisions. But in my life, and I think you believe this as well, you know, we have a rearview mirror. You got to use it, right? Because things behind you can be bigger than they seem. But you don't stare at the rearview mirror. It's there. You acknowledge it and then look forward. And we've learned things that I'm hoping will save millions of lives in the future, even though we probably lost tens of thousands of lives, not just in this country, around the planet. You pick. There's very few countries that were able to figure this out perfectly. Most could look back and say, geez, we had a problem here, could have done that better. We had our own issues in this country, and they primarily were around testing, which it's hard to blame any of the people you just mentioned because we didn't have tests. And without testing, you're basically saying fly this rapid tanker that's hard to turn and moves rapidly without any kind of guidance. And so we have to be a bit more forgiving on both sides, I personally believe. Next time around,
Forgiving. I had Andrew Cuomo on the show. We had a really good talk. And I'd be more forgiving if he wasn't screaming, I need 30,000 ventilators, when the 4,000 he has is in a warehouse. And when the president is sending a Navy ship with 1,000 beds and building a 3,000-bed hospital at the Javits Center and three other hospitals around the state and sending every and anything that New York wants and needs, and they did no preparation on their own. That's where, I guess, the intersection of health and politics. We have, New York in particular, how could you not be prepared? It blows my mind. And I would like to think that there's responsibility on the state and local level.
Of course there is, but our expectations, I think, across the board at every level, even in the local municipalities, were so far from what was anticipated. And everyone thought you'd have very clear guidelines from people in the know, until the people in the know had no information to make decisions with. But I'll tell you, just looking forward, back to the point I was making earlier, we will repeat this mistake if we don't get the testing right. That's why when the president was saying we're going to do 5 million tests with his Abbott device and others over the course of the month, and we've already done a million today, you know, as of today, that changes everything, because now you can begin to do the containment that did work in Germany and did work in South Korea.
But it's going to scare this country for the next few weeks. Americans are going to be like, what? Because we've tested more than any other country already, and now more tests, you're going to have more positive results, and it's going to probably fuel more fear.
Yeah, but John, you know, that's an excellent point. We have to focus people. Listen, we can focus people on the lives saved, which is shockingly good, right? Or we can focus people, if they really want to have a good dashboard, on the number of hospital admissions, right? Which I think is probably the best number to use overall, because that tells you a little ahead of time when people are going to be overwhelming your system. I don't think deaths, although we keep track of them, are very valuable right now because of mistakes made weeks ago. So if we just have that little bit, and then the second bit of data that's going to be really important.
Last question. How important was that travel ban? Do you agree with me that it probably is incalculable how much worse it would be?
Huge, huge benefit. And history is going to judge that decision very kindly. And they're going to applaud that as something we never could have anticipated, but made it dramatic. Just like when China locked down the entire 60 million people in Wuhan, history is going to say you gave people a couple extra weeks by doing that. Forget about what happened before and how it was managed, but just that little action bought time. The travel ban that the president put out there also bought us time. And then we had our mistakes.
Thanks for all you're doing. I know you're looking for treatment to save lives now. We're getting there. And thank you for your updates. We'll see you tonight on TV. Dr. Oz, thank you.
God bless. Take care.
Quick break. Right back. We'll continue.
MyPillow is a U.S. vertically integrated company which has been forced to adjust to the changing business environment as a result of the pandemic. MyPillow is uniquely positioned as a U.S. company that functions as a manufacturer, logistics management distributor, and direct-to-consumer. Given our current business lines, we are experiencing the effects of this pandemic firsthand. But MyPillow is done. We've established an internal task force which is monitoring future needs of companies across the country as a result of this pandemic. And given our position, we've begun to research and develop new protocols to address the current and future needs of U.S. businesses across multiple sectors. How companies are going to prepare themselves when they once again open up and changes to their current operations in order to adjust to future threats and pandemics. MyPillow has designated some of its call center to help U.S. companies navigate the many issues that resulted from this pandemic. We've dedicated 75% of my manufacturing to produce cotton face masks. In 3 days, I was up to 10,000 a day. By Friday, I want to be up to 50,000 a day. I'm proud to manufacture our products in the United States, and I'm even more proud to be able to serve our nation in this great time of need. Thank you, Mr. President, for your call to action, which has empowered companies like MyPillow to help our nation win this invisible war. Now, I wrote something off the cuff, if I can read this. Okay. God gave us grace on November 8, 2016 to change the course we were on. God had been taken out of our schools and lives. A nation had turned its back on God. And I encourage you to use this time at home to get back in the Word, read our Bibles, and spend time with our families. Our president gave us so much hope, where just a few short months ago, we had the best economy, the lowest unemployment, and wages going up. It was amazing. With our great president, vice president, and this administration, and all the great people in this country praying daily, we will get through this and get back to a place that's stronger and safer than ever.
All right, Mike Lindell, along with other leaders of industry that have been so amazing and have just stepped up in a million different ways, converting what is his, and obviously we're partners and friends with Mike, known him a long time. His life story is one of the more amazing stories I've ever heard. as he literally was pretty much on Skid Row and addicted to drugs, and he transformed his whole life, and he turns his life into producing products and success and sharing it with other people in ways, a multitude of ways that I don't even know if I'm allowed to tell people about, but especially in the area of helping people with addiction. And, he, you know, you had the CEO of Honeywell and Jockey and all of these other great companies. Procter & Gamble were there, all stepping up, just like GM, just like Ford, just like Walmart, Walgreens, Target, just like CVS, just like LabCorp, just like Quest Diagnostics, just like Novartis yesterday, 130 million doses of hydroxychloroquine, just like Israel sends over 6 million free doses. I mean, it's an amazing thing to watch, the best in humanity. And so that's his statement. And I'm like watching the mob and the media. You know, you got over there fake news, CNN. They're actually saying, Don Lemon, network should not air coronavirus briefings. You know, why not? Because there's valuable information in the middle of a national emergency. That's why. And the American people get to see and understand everything that is being done. Oh, can't have that. You know, same thing over at the conspiracy TV channel. Some guy named Chris Hayes. I don't even know anything about him. Seems crazy to me. Networks will still be taking Trump pressers live. I mean, you see the absolute worst. Steve Schmidt over there. I don't know what happened to Steve Schmidt and Nicole Wallace. They ran McCain's campaign. They're seeing the deadly consequences of incompetent, ignorant leadership. You mean the people that were impeaching the president, Steve, when Donald Trump was implementing a travel ban that now probably many of your new friends would consider xenophobic and hysteria and fear-mongering? It's just, you know, you see the best and you see the worst in people. And then they're attacking, I can't believe it, Mike Lindell, who's turning over his manufacturing facility to get the masks that we keep hearing we have shortages of, and he's just attacked all over the place. Fake news, CNN, all over the place, MSDNC. And it's just sad that that's where people's minds and hearts are, but it is the reality of where we are. Mike Lindell, how are you, sir?
Oh, Sean, it's been a long 2 days, but I'll tell you, you said it right. I just heard I was on Sebastian Gorka's show earlier in the afternoon. He told me what Jim Acosta said about me. He was 10 feet from there at the Rose Garden, and I looked it over him. I'm going, are you that evil? And I couldn't believe what he said about me. He played it on his show, you know, that I was there to just, like, for my own agenda, to advertise my pillow. I think people know who my pillow is by now. And how dare they? He was upset. That's just evil. It's pure evil because I spoke out not only what other companies should be doing, but I spoke out. I wanted to give people hope and speak out for God and speak out for Jesus. And you know what? Is that so bad to tell you to read your Bibles at home and get back with your families and pray for our president who's doing the greatest job in history? I'll tell you, I left that. I was there 5.5 hours at the White House, and I left there with so much more hope because I see what our president's doing. There were guys there going, you know what? I was talking to all individually, and I said, yeah, he had a governor that needed stuff that would have took like 10 months. He got it done in one day. One day, he's just, it's amazing. Sean, as you know, he can take a problem. Here's, listen to everybody taking the input, and here's the solution, but he's got a God-given gift that he knows what that solution will manifest to.
And well, I would imagine it was a big deal for you to take your entire manufacturing center for your business, put that on hold, and now how many masks are you producing a day?
Yeah, well, it took me about 2 weeks of doing my due diligence to find out what I could make, and then have the right materials, the right elastic and all this, train people to do it. I got up to 10,000 masks within one day, and I'll have 50,000 each day. I want to get up to 50,000 a day. And you got to realize, Sean, every employee, if they can only make 120 in an 8-hour shift, it's very labor intensive. And I've got other companies that work with my pillow that were part of my top. They're all U.S. companies where I get some of my fabric from. I have all them making masks too. And I became kind of a call center. I have 8 people. Part of my call center, all they're doing is taking in emails from people and hospitals and people, nursing homes we're donating here, you know, first responders. The ones that are, you know, sitting out there with nothing, we got to get take care of them first. And you know, I care. With my pill, my employees, I'm so proud of them. I couldn't do it without them. They're just amazing. One thing I did for them, Sean, which the president was talking to me about, these companies that are still open out there, like your grocery stores and your gas stations and stuff, these guys should do like MyPillow did. Like I was telling the president was telling me, these guys got to make their places safe too. And I said, yeah, we're doing that at MyPillow. You come in now, and we have a guard at the door, one of our guys, and they make sure that everyone wears a mask coming in, that they wash their hands, use a hand sanitizer. They can all go on break whenever they want. They don't have to go as a group. I want them feeling safe coming in there. And the president was saying, you know, all these grocery stores and stuff, they should be doing that. He said that they should be having someone at the door going, you guys come in with the mask, you know, do the hand sanitizer there, and all their employees doing it. I told him, I said, yeah, you're right, Mr. President. I said, I got a call from my friend in Oklahoma. He has the House of David Church. There was a car parts store there that got to be open, and there was 25 people in there, and acting like we're not even in a pandemic. But yet the church couldn't be open, and these guys aren't even practicing safe practices. So, you know, there's a big fight out there. They're attacking God in this country. The churches, maybe they should be deemed an essential business, because that's what I said. We should all be out praying. You know, everybody goes 6 feet apart in a church and get masked at the door and sanitized, and we pray to get our country back to God and get it back to the great place it's going to be when we get through this.
I just want to say something. I just want to say thank you. Now, we've become good friends over the years. I am the biggest fan of your products. You know me. I'm not the biggest sleeper, but I sleep better because of MyPillow, and I have all of your items because I want them all. But more importantly, I know your patriotism. What people might not know is Mike has a foundation to help people overcome addiction, and he's building it out bigger and bigger and bigger every day because he lived in that world, and getting out of it, he's the most thankful guy in the world. And I know your faith and your belief in God helped you get there. And for you to offend people by explaining that is like unbelievable to me. So predictable, but unbelievable.
Right, it is. And I want to say something, Sean. I was waiting to do your show today. People out there now that are addicted, obviously a lot of you, like in New York, you're trapped and you're in a place you're not even going, you can't even go get your drugs and so on. And if you're sitting there, now's the time for you to get, you know, really get into the Word, read your Bible, but also every single person knows a success story. If you're a 22-year-old opiate addict, you know some of your friends that have made it through. You got your phone and you're sitting there, get on the phone and FaceTime him and ask him how he made it through. That'll be your hope match. We all have hope matches out there. And I'll tell you, my friend came back. He was my equal in 2009, in December of 2008. We were equal. We had both done cocaine at the same time, both switched to crack. And he had been clean for 3 years, and I asked him all these questions. And, you know, is it boring? And he said, no, man, it ain't boring. But, boy, went a long way for me, because I respect people that have been there. I'm going to listen to them. So anybody out there, you're sitting home and you're scared of where we're at with this pandemic, get in the Word, get on your phone and FaceTime people that have been through it. And this is the time you can. It's like one big prayer session in the country and one big AA, but the higher power is Jesus Christ.
I can't add to that. Amen. Mike Lindell, thank you for what you're doing for your country. God bless you for doing all that. We appreciate it. Wow. You get attacked for making masks at a time your country says that needs masks. You get mocked, you get made fun of. It's just outrage. Unbelievable. You know, what have I been saying? The best of times, the worst of times. You know, I'm watching over, you know, all of these networks. I don't know. What were the Democrats doing when the travel ban? They were in the middle of impeachment. They were calling Donald Trump xenophobic, hysterical, and a fear-mongerer. You know, you got, Nancy Pelosi threatening Trump with another investigation. We want another investigation into what you were doing. Well, we know what Nancy was doing, impeachment. Urgently, before Christmas, so she can go on her vacation. And then back, and in the middle of it, they weren't talking about this. You know, Lindsey Graham, the most shameful, disgusting statement by any politician in modern history, it's right up there. Unbelievable. And then you got the idiots out. They got Nadler. telling Attorney General Barr to release as many prisoners as possible. You got the D.C. mayor threatening jail time if you leave your home. We're getting into a little weird territory here. You had this pastor arrested for violating rules and had two Sunday services. I'm not sure people want to do it. I think it's a bad idea. If everyone would just hang in there and follow these very simple rules, it sucks. Our lives are disrupted. Nobody likes it. But we're helping prevent other people from getting this and putting an end to it more quickly so we could all get back to our normal life. That would be the best part. If we can do that. We shouldn't air Trump supporters, Trump pressers anymore. Wow. Trump said the fake news Acosta. This is why people don't care about fake news CNN anymore. It just is madness. There is a level of crazy and a level of madness out there. And, you know, I can go through everything that we've done. The list is too long now. We didn't know Corona was in this country till January 21st. It's now March 31st. Figure it out. January 21st, February 21st. It's a little over 2 months. Look at what's transformed. Is anyone going to call a travel ban xenophobic in the future? Or are we going to say, good idea? Quarantines in the future, good idea. Are we going to immediately try to, now that what used to take years and we can break down the sequence of a virus and begin stage one trials in less than 2 months, I think that's going to be the future too. All these public-private partnerships, all the companies, by the way, that often get demonized by the mob on the left and the media and the Democratic Party, big pharmaceutical, big insurance companies, big box stores like Walmart. I love Walmart. Thank them for what they're doing. Then look at the pharmaceutical Abbott now. We're going to have 50,000 tests a day in the country because of them, and you know the results in 5 minutes. It's called progress. You know, look at the triage hospitals built in New York. Javits Center, 3,000 beds. Commandeer, the Navy ship, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast. They're massive. I was there last night. All of this happened. Get rid of draconian FDA rules. So now, okay, off-label use, compassionate use, right to try. We're getting nothing but great anecdotal, you know, results as it relates to hydroxychloroquine with azithromycin and zinc and convalescent plasma. Another thing. It's all happened. We have now rewritten the entire books, every book on how to deal with pandemic. And you listen to, you know, confused Joe or, you know, Cuomo, who had an opportunity to buy ventilators. I don't even think they had any. They didn't have any gowns. They didn't have any masks. They didn't have any extra gloves. The number one target in the country for terrorism. The number one, you know, most vulnerable area for a pandemic. Now we're getting it done because we're Americans. We got to take care of those that need help the most. All right, news roundup and information overload hour. Sean Hannity Show, 800-941. Sean, you want to be a part of this extravaganza. I'll tell you, this thing with Joe Biden every day is just nobody's paying attention to it. Nobody's paying attention. Stumbling through an answer on coronavirus response, the Wuhan province. No, not Wuhan, Joe. And you say, oh, come on, Hannity. You make gaffes all the time, too. Well, okay, but this guy's a gaffe machine. But I think, does he have the strength, the stamina, and the mental alertness to be president? Doesn't seem too with it to me. Gets CVS wrong, calls it CVC.
Oh, well, the president said that a couple weeks ago that every CVC and other, he named four outlets, were going to have testing sites outside of their stores.
Uh-huh. You know what's frustrating about this? They never replenished the masks that were needed in the N1H1 pandemic in 2009 and 10. They never had a travel ban. By the time Obama himself declared a national emergency, well, 6 months later, his Health and Human Services Secretary did it 11 days, I called it emergency, but there was no urgency. 1,000 Americans by that point were dead. And this is far worse than what they had. You know, you can't time a pandemic in terms of what happens. These things happen. I wish pandemics never happen. We all wish pandemics never happen. But the response and the media response was nothing like what we see today. There's no credit ever given to the president. Everything is now seen through the prism. I told you at the beginning of this year, every bit of news we're going to cover is going to be seen through the prism of the 2020 election. And it just is that way during election years. I can't really change that. This really irks me about what's going on in New York. Now, I've been telling you, it's kind of frustrating to me on so many levels. Right now, thanks to the American people, I'm in New York right now. Ground zero for this. But we know with a pandemic, this is not complicated science. We know medical social distancing works. We're seeing results I mentioned earlier and seemingly in San Francisco and elsewhere. That's why they were extended. And we're seeing some hope that there it's beginning its decline. There's a pattern to this. And if the models hold true and past patterns hold true, it will again. It's not that hard to figure out that there are going to be pandemics from time to time. N1H1, to quote Joe, or this Wuhan Chinese virus, whatever you want to call it, coronavirus. You got one here, and they're all different. And we've had unprecedented new pandemic, you know, going forward, everything, all the rules are going to change, all of them. New York, high concentration of people. In the smallest area, 10 million people, small square footage, stacked on top of each other, in the middle of a pandemic, yeah, they are most at risk from day one. Just by the very nature of it, being an international city compounds that problem many fold. Just like the number one terror target. Well, I guess you could make an argument that it's D.C. or New York, but I would probably say New York. The first Trade Center bombing, we know what happened on 9/11. We know what happened in D.C. on 9/11 and the Pentagon. But I'd say New York. I'd guess the financial capital of the country and the governmental capital being Washington, D.C. So you would think that there are some preparations that are made. Unfortunately, there's not. And I am watching, you know, things that are happening. Now, if, for example, when Andrew Cuomo was on this program and he sounded like, yeah, let's all work together. Let's all get it done. I said, you're back and forth with the president. That's over now, right? Yeah, that's over now. And it didn't last very long. And then when he would say about 400, I need 30,000 or whatever the number was that he said that he wanted. And the problem is, I guess, maybe he feels no sense of responsibility. Now, in New York, his approval rating is through the roof right now. I don't think people have a clue of what he didn't do. I don't think people understand. I mean, it's a very effective technique, I guess, thinking that the federal government is responsible for everything. This is his third term as governor. He's not new to this position. This is not a new job for him. Comrade de Blasio, second term. Governor Cuomo, it is his third term. Anyway, so they were warned in 2015. You know, this, you look at this coronavirus, you see what's happening here. You know, hospitals are running short. And I'm going to say Cuomo's done some good things in New York. But when he starts passing the buck and blaming, several years ago, in 2015, we learned that New York State's stockpile of medical equipment had fewer than 16,000 ventilators. Or they were shy 16,000. They only had 2,000 of them. They could have chosen at that time to buy more ventilators to back up their supplies that were recommended. They recommended you needed to get 16,000 more. 2,000 is not enough. They could have bought more of them. They could have gotten the recommended amount, 18,000. If you would have gotten them right now, we would say, wow, that was a smart call. Wow, thank goodness. We wouldn't be playing catch up, but thank God we have people like Ford and GM and they're stepping up. But they didn't do that. They could have stockpiled it and put it in a warehouse, and now we would be taking them all out. Anyway, instead, what they did in 2015, they had a task force. Instead of buying the ventilators that you could easily predict a pandemic in New York would be, you know, very, very dangerous for every person in New York, especially New York City. It's not like New York doesn't have enough money. They've taken a fortune in New York, and they could have purchased them. But instead, the task force, what they came up with, were rules that would be imposed when the ventilators run short. But they've since added a rule, blame Donald Trump. But anyway, the patients were assigned a red code. They will have the highest access to the 2,000 ventilators that they needed. They had determined they needed 18,000. And other patients will be assigned green, yellow, or blue, depending on the triage officer's decision. I mean, as Betsy McCoy said, in truth, a death officer. Let's not sugarcoat it. Now, I don't think I'd go that far myself. But it won't be up to your own doctor is what the point she was making. Now, they were expensive. Now, the $16,000 were about $36,000 a piece. But a pandemic, when you have 10 million people or so in a very small geographical area, pandemics are predictable. It would not have been a dumb idea to go out and buy those things. It's sort of like, you know, and then we look at, well, what did Andrew Cuomo spend money on over the three terms that he's now been governor? $750 million on a failed solar panel factory. It failed. $750 million. You can't afford the 16,000 ventilators? Another $600,000 that he wasted in another project. Again, mothballed. $90 million on an empty light bulb factory. And it's not that I begrudge. Of course, the federal government now will step in. You see, the Javits Center in New York is now turned into a 3,000-bed hospital. We watched the U.S. Navy hospital ship Comfort. It was so majestic last night to be able to see this up close. You know, come into New York at one of the West Side Highway piers where we broadcast last night. It's great. And I'm just saying, you know, and you look at the monies, well, New York has the highest tax collections per capita of any other state. I mean, they're collecting $9,073 in taxes per state residence. That is insane. And probably contributes to the reason why so many people in recent years are leaving New York. High taxes, burdensome regulation. And the most ironic thing is New York could be one of the richest states and lower its taxes and have more money if, in fact, they had opened up fracking in upstate New York. We could have done that in a heartbeat. They didn't do it. Now, I would prefer that the governor of New York, I said to him when he was on this program, I want to help you. Linda knows something that we're trying to do that would help the state of New York. I don't like that they're not allowing people to get hydroxychloroquine on their own. You can't even get it. It's illegal now to get it from a pharmacy. You can get it at hospitals, but you have to go to the hospital. Last place you want to go if you think you have a milder case of this is the hospital. According to all the medical professionals I have, you know, talk to. I don't know. The team responsible. Oh, and the latest. Cuomo's team's response to the 16,000 ventilators they didn't buy in 2015, he obviously didn't read the document. Danny Lever, a spokesperson for Cuomo, said in a statement to The Hill, that was a five-year-old advisory task force report, which never recommended the state procure ventilators. It's not true. They said you're going to need it. There's a pandemic. That's how many you need. Merely referenced that New York wouldn't be equipped with enough ventilators if there was a 1918-style flu pandemic. Okay, well, they're telling you to buy them. That's not that rough to interpret. Again, I wouldn't care if he wasn't out there, I need 40,000. And then the photo ops. I'm watching every day. You know, there's Andrew Cuomo. Behind him is the U.S. Navy hospital ship that Donald Trump sent him. There he is at the Javits Center, 3,000 beds, and he's taking the media on a tour. That's Donald Trump built that, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The 4,000 ventilators he had to finally admit were in a warehouse Donald Trump sent up here, too. And the guy that is, you know, that is using now the Defense Procurement Act, telling GM to move there, you know what, and get, I want them faster, is Donald Trump. Why for New York and for other states as this now moves around? It's not about politics. It's about they politicize it. Just like Nancy Pelosi's, the president dithering or whatever stupid comment she made. She was impeaching the president. There was nobody that supported on the Democratic Party that I have found that was supportive of the travel ban and the quarantine. And it's that type of thing. I'm like, wow, unbelievable to me. It really is. It's sad and it's unbelievable, but I hate to tell you, it's also predictable. The media mob, they can't say one good thing that Donald Trump has done. I have a list a mile long of everything the president and his task force has done. Every past pandemic, take those books, rules, throw them out. Because the book has been rewritten right before our eyes. It's a transformational time. And it's going to ultimately save lives with travel bans and public-private partnerships and telemedicine and getting rid of or bypassing FDA regulations, both for testing, for vaccines, for off-label drugs, compassionate use, right to try. That's all transformative. He doesn't get any credit. And the mob and the media, we can't carry the coronavirus task force press conferences. What, you don't want to hear from Dr. Fauci? You don't want an update on how many ventilators are being made? Or masks are being made? Or gloves are being made? And gowns are being made? And shields are being made? I do. I think healthcare workers would probably like to hear that too. All right, as we roll along, any moment we expect the coronavirus task force briefing with the president, vice president. All right, let's get to our busy phones. Ryan is in Ohio. Hey, Ryan, how are you? Glad you called, sir.
Doing today, Sean?
I'm good. It's weird here. I'm telling you, it's very bizarre. I mean, New York's like, I'm serious. It's like dead. I mean, I've never seen it like this. It's a little scary, but I know we're going to get through it.
Yeah, well, it's bizarre times for everybody right now, and I'd first like to reach out and say Godspeed to Mike Lindell and all that he's doing and providing for the country and help. There's a way I can help it, yeah. If there's a way I can help him, I'd sure like to be able to be connected with him. I just kind of wanted to reach out to you. I've got 40 years of experience in infection control and safety, environmental safety. 20 years of it within healthcare and hospital facilities. I've probably cleaned 1,000 ventilators and decontaminated 1,000 of them in my lifetime. And one of the things that came across my desk here just today was a notice about knowing some folks over, physicians and other people in Italy. And what we're finding out is that the social isolation is so very important because one of the aspects that they're now learning is that when people move around in areas and cough and sneeze and so forth, the particulates get on surfaces like the floor, and they can survive 2 to 3 days, 4 days sometimes. Mm-hmm. And what happens, people walk through them, and then they walk home, and they spread these viruses. That's how they're finding.
Well, that is some of the bad news that we got today, that people that are recovered can still be infectious even now and contagious. Another issue, and I want to hold you through the break. I want to ask you about these ventilators on the other side. But another issue is that it's a complicated piece of medical equipment, and they don't have enough people that can properly operate them. I'll explain on the other side, waiting for the coronavirus task force. We'll go to that live if it happens. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. President taking to the podium, the daily coronavirus task force briefing. Let's listen in.
Thank you very much, everyone. Our country is in the midst of a great national trial, unlike any we have ever faced before. You all see it. You see it probably better than most. We're at war with a deadly virus. Success in this fight will require the full, absolute measure of our collective strength, love, and devotion. Very important. Each of us has the power, through our own choices and actions, to save American lives and rescue the most vulnerable among us. That's why we really have to do what we all know is right. Every citizen is being called upon to make sacrifices. Every business is being asked to fulfill its patriotic duty. Every community is making fundamental changes to how we live, work, and interact. each and every day, and I wouldn't be surprised to see this going on long into the future when this virus is gone and defeated. Some of the things we're doing now will be very good practice for the future, including for not getting the flu, which is very devastating also. So some of what we're learning now will live on into the future. I really believe that shaking hands or not shaking hands, washing hands all the time, staying a little apart. 15 days ago, we published our nationwide guidelines to slow the spread of the virus. On Sunday, I announced that this campaign will be extended until April 30th. In a few moments, Dr. Birx will explain the data that formed the basis for our decision to extend the guidelines, and Dr. Fauci will explain why it's absolutely critical for the American people to follow the guidelines for the next 30 days. It's a matter of life and death, frankly. It's a matter of life and death. I know our citizens will rise to the occasion, and they already have sacrificed a lot. We had the greatest economy in the history of our country. We had the greatest economy in the world. We had the best unemployment numbers and employment numbers that we've ever had by far. And in one instant, we said, we have no choice but to close it up. Just as Americans have always done, they will do a job like few have seen before, and they're proud to do it. I see that. There's a great pride going on right now. Before we hear from our experts, we have a few other announcements today. The Treasury Department and Small Business Administration announced further details on the Paycheck Protection Program, which was made possible by the $2 trillion relief bill I signed into law last week. Nearly $350 billion in loans will soon be available through lending partners to help small businesses meet payroll and other expenses for up to 2 months. These loans will be forgiven as long as businesses keep paying their workers. This includes sole proprietors and independent contractors. Applications will be accepted starting this Friday, April 3rd. So on Friday, April 3rd, that's when it begins. Earlier today, I spoke with leading internet and phone providers who are doing a tremendous job of keeping our internet and lines of communication flowing under very strongly increased strain. The business is more than anybody has seen before because everyone's inside. They're all making calls. Among the leaders I spoke to were Hans Vestberg of Verizon Communications, Randall Stevenson of AT&T, Mike Sievert of T-Mobile, Thomas Rutledge of Charter Communications, Brian Roberts of Comcast, John Malone of Liberty Media, Dexter Goy of Altice, Michael Combs of Sprint, and Araya Borkoff of Liontree. Also, Pat Esser of Cox Communications and Jeffrey Story of CenturyLink. They're doing an incredible job. If you look at other continents, if you look at Europe, they went a different route than we did, and a much different route. We were talking about that just a little while ago. And they're having tremendous problems. Other countries are having problems. Other continents are having problems. But with business at a level that nobody's seen it before on the internet, it's holding up incredibly well. And they expect that to continue no matter what happened and no matter how much more it gains, which if it can gain more than it already is, I don't know, because they're setting records. Let me also update you on the distribution of urgently needed resources and supplies. And we have a lot of numbers. I'm going to let Mike Pence speak to that in a little while. But we're giving massive amounts of medical equipment and supplies to the 50 states. We also are holding back quite a bit. We have almost 10,000 ventilators that we have ready to go. We have to hold them back because the surge is coming, and it's coming pretty strong. and we want to be able to immediately move it into place without going and taking it. So we're ready to go, and we've also distributed. I just spoke with Governor of Michigan, had a great conversation, and we sent a large number of ventilators to Michigan. We're sending them to Louisiana. We sent additional ventilators to New York, additional ventilators to New Jersey. And I will say, in New York, FEMA is supplying 250 ambulances and 500 EMTs to help respond to the increasing caseload. That's a lot of ambulances. In California, the Army Corps of Engineers is developing 8 facilities to expand hospital capacity up to 50,000 beds, 50,000. And had a great conversation last night with Gavin Newsom. He's doing a really good job. We're in constant communications. The USNS Mercy Hospital ship is now operational. It's in Los Angeles and receiving patients. And in New York, as you know, the Comfort, everybody watch that. It's in place and will be in a very short while receiving large numbers of patients, over 1,000 rooms and 12 operating rooms. FEMA's also provided 100 travel trailers to assist with housing needs, and we're ordering hundreds more. In Michigan, FEMA will soon deliver, in addition to the ventilators, 250 bed field hospital, and Army Corps of Engineers is evaluating locations to build alternate care facilities. So we're doing a field hospital in Michigan of 250 beds, and we may be doubling it up soon, depending on the need. They're doing a good job with beds in Michigan, but they may need more than the 250. So FEMA and the Army Corps of Engineers are prepared to go there quickly and get it done. In Louisiana, we're delivering 2 field hospitals to provide 500 new hospital beds. I've been talking with the governor, John Bel Edwards, and the Army Corps of Engineers has been really doing incredible work, establishing 3,000-bed alternate care site at the New Orleans Convention Center, which will be operational, believe it or not, this week. So we're doing a 3,000-bed alternate care site, and we're also doing a 500-bed new hospital. And that's in Louisiana, which really got hit. It started off very late, and it was looking good, and then all of a sudden it just reared up, came from nowhere. In addition to the supplies we're delivering, we're also giving hospitals the flexibility to use new facilities, including surgical care centers, to care for hospital patients who are not infected. For example, I know that many expectant mothers are understandably concerned about exposing their newborn babies to the virus, and they should be. With our action yesterday, hospitals now have the authority to create special areas for mothers to deliver their babies in a very safe and healthy environment, totally separate. Over the past 2 months, the U.S. State Department has organized one of the largest and most complex international evacuation operations in American history. Mike Pompeo has been working round the clock, along with Ambassador O'Brien. Since January 29th, we have successfully repatriated over 25,000 Americans from more than 50 countries where they were literally stuck, in some cases locked in. And I salute the incredible public servants at the Department of State, as well as their counterparts at DHS and HHS, who have played such an important role in doing this. You probably read about the young people in Peru and young people in Brazil, and they were absolutely stuck, and we got them out, almost everybody is out now, back home with their parents, their wives, their husbands. I want every American to be prepared for the hard days that lie ahead. We're going to go through a very tough 2 weeks, and then hopefully, as the experts are predicting, as I think a lot of us are predicting after having studied it so hard, you're going to start seeing some real light at the end of the tunnel. But this is going to be a very painful, very, very painful 2 weeks. when you look and see at night the kind of death that's been caused by this invisible enemy. It's incredible. I was watching last night Governor Murphy of New Jersey say 29 people died today, meaning yesterday, and others talking about numbers far greater, but you get to know a state. I know New Jersey so well, and you hear 29 people and hundreds in other locations, hundreds in other states. And this is going to be a rough two-week period. As a nation, we face a difficult few weeks as we approach that really important day when we're going to see things get better all of a sudden. And it's going to be like a burst of light, I really think, and I hope. Our strength will be tested and our endurance will be tried. But America will answer with love and courage and ironclad resolve. This is the time for all Americans to come together and do our part. I appreciate a lot of the media. We've had a lot of really good things said. I think only good things can be said when you look at the job that's been done. I just spoke with Franklin Graham, who's an extraordinary person, and Samaritan's Purse has been, like so many others, just been amazing and so fast. They did it so fast. He's been doing that for a long time, but I think people are really seeing what they have done.
All right, the Coronavirus Daily Task Force briefings. We are continuing our coverage along the Sean Hannity Show network. And while some of you may be breaking away, we will continue our coverage through the upcoming break as we go back to the coverage.
Pray for the doctors and the nurses, for the paramedics and the truck drivers and the police officers and the sanitation workers, and above all, the people fighting for their lives in New York and all across our land. I watched as doctors and nurses went into a certain hospital in Elmhurst this morning. I know Elmhurst, Queens. I grew up right next to it. I know the hospital very well. Been seeing it all my life, my young life. And I will tell you that to see the scenes of trailers out there and what they're doing with those trailers, they're freezers, and nobody can even believe it. And I spoke to some of my friends. They can't believe what they're seeing. And I watched the doctors and the nurses walking into that hospital this morning. It's like military people going into battle, going into war. The bravery is incredible. And I just have to take my hat. I would take my hat. If I were wearing a hat, I'd rip that hat off so fast. And I would say, you people are just incredible. They really are. They're very brave. They're going in and they don't know. You have lots of things flying around in the air. You don't know what you're touching. Is it safe? And you also see where you have friends that go into the hospital and you say, how is he doing 2 days later? And they say, sir, he's unconscious or he's in a coma. So things are happening that we've never seen before in this country. And with all of that being said, the country's come together like I've never seen it before. And we will prevail. We will win. And hopefully it will be in a relatively short period of time. With that, I'd like to ask Dr. Birx to come up and show you some of the latest, just the data that has been, I think, brilliantly put together. And right after that, I'm going to ask Dr. Fauci to speak. And Mike Pence is going to give you some of the recent events that have taken place and some of the statistics that we have that I think will be very interesting here. Thank you very much. Please, Doctor.
Thank you, Mr. President. If I can have the first slide, please. So always, and that's what this slide is labeled, is goals of community mitigation, really highlighting that this begins in the middle and the end with community. It is community and the community of the American people that are going to have to do the things for the next 30 days to make a difference. I think you know from that large blue mountain that you can see behind me, and I just want to thank the five or six international and domestic modelers from Harvard, from Columbia, from Northeastern, from Imperial, who helped us tremendously. It was their models that created the ability to see what these mitigations could do, how steeply they could depress the curve from that giant blue mountain down to that more stippled area. In their estimates, they had between 1.5 million and 2.2 million people in the United States succumbing to this virus without mitigation. Yet through their detailed studies and showing us what social distancing would do, what would happen if people stayed home, what would happen if people were careful every day to wash their hands and worry about touching their faces, that what an extraordinary thing this could be if every American followed these. And it takes us to that stippled mountain that's much lower, a hill actually, down to 100 to 200,000 deaths, which is still way too much. Next slide, please. Simultaneously, there was a modeler out of the University of Washington that modeled from cases up, utilizing the experience around the globe to really understand how this information that we have from Italy and Spain and South Korea and China could really help us give insight into the hospital needs, the ventilator needs, and really the number of people who potentially could succumb to this illness. It is this model that we are looking at now that provides us the most detail of the time course that is possible. But this model assumes full mitigation. It's informed every morning or every night by the reality on the ground coming in from New York, New Jersey, and around the United States, and is modeled and informed every morning so that it is adjusted, so it is up to date every day. This is the model of the predicted fatalities and mortality in the United States. And as the president said, it's very much focused on the next 2 weeks and the stark reality of what this virus will do as it moves through communities. Next slide, please. But this is a slide that gives us great hope and understanding about what is possible. On the bottom of the slide, where you can barely see that blue line at the very bottom, that's the current cases in California, the cumulative cases in California, where they're doing significant testing. The next line up is Connecticut. The orange line is New Jersey. The blue line is New York. The yellow line is Washington. We all remember Washington State. It was just a month ago when they started to have the issues in Washington State, but they brought together their communities and their health providers, and they put in strong mitigation methods and testing. And you can see what the result in Washington State and California is. But without the continuation for the next 30 days, anything could change. Next slide, please. So I'm sure you're interested in seeing all the states. So on this slide is all 50 states and the District of Columbia. But I think it shows in stark reality the difference between New York and New Jersey and other states with similar populations and urban areas. Our goal over the next 30 days is to ensure the states that you see, the 48 across the bottom, maintain this lower level of new cases with the hope that we don't have significant outbreaks in other states, in other metro areas, as the community comes together to work together and ensure that the healthcare providers around the globe and in the United States are strengthened by our resolve to continue to mitigate community by community. This is done community by community. We all know people are in their states and in their communities. And we're very dependent on each person in the United States doing the same thing, following the presidential guidelines to a T. I know it's a lot to ask because you've done it for 15 days. So if you can show the next slide, please. So this is what gives us a lot of hope. This is the case finding in Italy. And you can see that they're beginning to turn the corner in new cases. They're entering their fourth week of full mitigation and showing what is possible when we work together as a community, as a country, to change the course of this pandemic together. It is this graphic and the graphic of many of the states that gives us hope of what is possible with continuing for another 30 days. Amidst all that hope, I must say that, like we warned about Detroit and Chicago.
All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. We'll have more coverage of this. The accompanying charts we will show you on Hannity tonight. We'll update you on the latest information that you need, Facts Without Fear. We'll talk about where the hope is, where the worrisome areas are, the villains, the heroes. Thank God there's more heroes than villains. We have Dr. Oz and much more full coverage tonight, comprehensive, 9 Eastern. We hope you'll set your DVR. Hannity, Fox News. As always, thanks for being with us. I'll see you tonight at 9, back here tomorrow.